Hello and welcome everyone back to another episode of The Publisher Lab. I'm Tyler Bishop, and as you might expect, the person joining me on my podcast, say it like it's my podcast. I think if it's anyone's podcast, Shelby, it's yours, Shelby Kang.
I think it's The Publisher's Podcast.
Publisher's Lab, if you will.
Quite literally.
Yeah, so it's good to be back, and it's good to be back on the show with you. I know we were kind of out of the habit of having us both on there for a second, and now we've got a couple good shows back to back here, and you know, right on time. You know, the summer is normally the doldrums of kind of the ad world news, or not even just ad world, but I would say just like publishing industry, tech industry, and here we are in the middle of a pandemic, and I feel like we've got news all around us.
Yeah, we definitely do. Probably because we're all locked up inside and not enjoying nice summer vacations, but that's okay. The first thing I wanted to talk about today was the Taboola and Outbrain mergers. So this article is from DigiDay, and it's titled, "The U.S. is on board, but will the Taboola-Outbrain merger hold up to global scrutiny?" So the U.S. Department of Justice won't get in the way with the merger, but it still needs to be cleared from the Israel Competition Authority, since both Taboola and Outbrain were founded there, as well as the U.K.'s Competition and Markets Authority, which actually launched an investigation earlier this month after an initial probe. So whether the merger would pose a significant downturn in the overall market is kind of up to the eye of the beholder. So, I mean, these are the two largest content recommendation companies. But at the same time, if you're viewing it as more of the broader display market, then of course, Google is kind of the real powerhouse. So publishers are definitely eager to find out how all of this will affect their yields. So one anonymous source noted how the economic impact of COVID-19 may inadvertently play a big role in this, as the revenue guarantees have fast become a thing of the past. In a blog post from June 29th, the CEO of Taboola said that they've asked their publisher partners to work with them through these challenging times by temporarily switching from a revenue guarantee to a shared revenue. So it's not like new revenue guarantees are going away. It seems like the ones that are standing have also kind of temporarily been put on hold. I wanted to pick your brain about this and kind of what your perspective is on it.
Yeah, I mean, without going really, really hard on them, I think we can kind of maybe look back historically at native ad networks and look at someone like Taboola and Outbrain. And realistically, what I think is kind of probably funny to people that are like very familiar with those name brands is that they actually became two of the more high quality ones. And I know that in both cases, they can both get bad reputations, but there were and still are some native ad networks that provide the like bottom of the barrel types of content recommendations. And they were really the first two to really scale. And you know, probably 4 years ago, native ad networks were a really big portion of revenue for a lot of publishers, specifically publishers that were making lots of money off of Facebook pages and sending traffic to their sites that were very viral in nature, you know, the BuzzFeedy ripoffs of the world and stuff like that. And, you know, the environment has really shifted over the last 4 or 5 years. And even though the merger definitely makes sense on paper, when you look at the you know, I guess the economic model and just the environment where native ad networks are not the player that they once were for all publishers, their tool that they both kind of had for a long time was that they would give publishers these huge revenue guarantees for 2-year contracts, and they literally couldn't take their ad tags off the page. And what many of those publishers learned was that having those ad tags on the page, you know, they were very dynamic in the way that they inserted lots and lots of ad tech onto the page, and publishers usually learned to regret that to a certain extent, and it was damaging to other stuff that was on the page in many cases. Without trying to be too hard on the idea of a native ad network, because there is a time and a place. I think that, you know, those types of recommendation engines and types of advertisements make sense. Both of them combining and merging from an antitrust standpoint has noticeably raised some red flags, right? I think it's the EU is one place they're still waiting for approval. Is that right?
The UK.
The UK, yeah. And so I actually think it probably works out great for them right now from the standpoint of I think it's complex and the details of the merger probably are constantly shifting. And like you said, they're trying to get out of the guarantees, which I think is really interesting because they were notorious for a long time of forcing publishers into these two-year contracts where it's one thing if you have to pay a penalty. It's another thing if you physically can't get rid of it. You know, I cannot take their tags off my page no matter what. That's pretty, it's pretty aggressive. So maybe a little bit of, I wouldn't say taste of their own medicine because that sounds like they deserve a punishment. But realistically, it's like if you're going to live by that model, you know, you might have to die by that model too. So,
right. Yeah. What was it? I forgot whether it was the New York Times or maybe the Wall Street Journal. A while back, they signed a 2-year contract with either Taboola or Outbrain. But I remember at the time I was being kind of so shocked because I don't know. 2 years is a long time.
It is a very long time, especially in this space, because like I said, 2 years ago from right now, native ad networks were a lot more common. Now, I mean, realistically, if you went on the New York Times and you saw Taboola at the bottom, wouldn't you be somewhat surprised right now?
I don't want to say that I think less of native ads, but it's just from my experiences with the native, they're not that great.
And what's interesting is I feel like they have cleaned up their act in a large part, but the damage is sort of done. Like you kind of get a brand for being a brand. Like BuzzFeed is obviously a different type of publisher than they used to be. And BuzzFeed News is sort of kind of dying on the vine now. But BuzzFeed News was actually quite different from BuzzFeed, but it was very hard to separate, you know, and get people to believe that that's a serious source of news because they think of BuzzFeed as like Kimmy K's top 5 lip glosses of 2019 or whatever.
Maybe we'll be able to all overcome that stigma. They're really not that bad. And you're right. They have gotten a lot better over time.
Yeah. And I think each publisher, I mean, if you look at brand publishers, they've kind of, a lot of them have built their own. I think a lot of publishers have like increased scrutiny and stuff like that. And I think when you have it that way, you realize that it's a tool and it's not a broad brush tool, one that you want to be using on every page for every user.
Right, definitely. The next topic I have on deck today is also from DigiDay, and it's titled The Italians Are Back, Fashion Advertising Roars Back to Life for Publishers. So 3 months after the coronavirus stopped the industry in its track, fashion brands are beginning to spend again on advertising. So they're not just promoting their fall and winter lines, but they're trying to capitalize on the pent-up consumer demand as stores start to reopen again. So although it is exciting news, some are saying that the budgets that have been unlocked are more focused on driving outcomes and that they're expecting the recent trend of fashion brands doing bigger campaigns with fewer partners to accelerate this year. So lockdowns around the world have shut down production and they left brands suddenly unable to sell their clothing online or in person. And also social distancing regulations in cities like New York and LA meant that brands couldn't really assemble the crews they needed to create the slick and stylized ads that they're used to showing consumers. So in 2019, the apparel and retail apparel advertisers spent a combined of $4.75 billion on advertising. In general, ad spend in that category declined by 45% year over year in the second quarter. But the majority of that decline was actually due to print ads. So I just wanted to include this because it does kind of seem like good news, even though there is that caveat about fashion brands working with fewer publishers. And also the last tidbit kind of just iterates on what you've been saying about how brands are really turning towards digital ads at this time.
Well, it makes a lot of sense, right? So I think about this a little bit. One of the things I've been paying a lot of attention to during this time period is the stock market and kind of the where you can look at how ad rates and how different types of publisher traffic correlate to the success of different companies. I think the stock market isn't necessarily like the best measure of a business's success, but it does give you an idea of, I mean, most of those public companies have to report their earnings and then also give outlook. And so you get to see things from their perspective. So which ones are basically going to be winning and losing. And it gives you a really good picture of the types of retail brands or fashion brands, even consumer goods or material brands that have benefited in this. And one of the things that you can look at is major consumer brands like Coca-Cola and a lot of the stuff that is owned by Constellation. They've weathered the storm. They've been impacted, but that brand name is so valuable that people are not going to stop buying Coca-Cola, right? And so a lot of their advertising may have to go alongside their revenue, but for the most part, they're going to continue to do a lot of their stuff, but they are going to be limited in some of their mediums, right? Like professional sports, something we've talked about before. Now, what I think it's interesting is you know, the Italian fashion, all that kind of stuff is, if you look at fashion brands, a brand like Nike that diversified several years ago and spent a lot of time making their own app, their own web domain as a central e-commerce location. They have the sneakers app for when they drop sneakers. They've got their running app. They've got a lot of different things that basically drive people directly to them, just like a DTC brand or direct to consumer. So they look a lot like what you would consider a lot of these sort of online or direct to consumer brands, and they borrowed from that. Meanwhile, you have people like Adidas or Reebok that have continued like your traditional retail consumer model, and they have not fared near as well. And so someone like Lululemon as well, that's done really, really well in this because their origins are e-com online. And so what you're seeing is all these major retail brands, stuff like Brooks Brothers has filed for bankruptcy, J. Crew filed for bankruptcy. The ones that are still here that do have a brand name, they're realizing they have to basically, they have to expedite their e-com or online or digital footprint or completely shift their model to match those of the DTC brands of the world. And guess what that means? That means a lot more digital spending. So when you look at everything, it's not just marketing budget there. They're spending a lot of money to be found online. And that means influencer arrangements. That means sponsored content. So I think if you're a publisher, one of the things you can look at is that as the advertisers come back, it's not just programmatic. It's the money will have shifted here in a big way long term, because this has moved so much of what used to be spread out across a lot of different places, and even taken brands that didn't used to be, you know, maybe let's say 50% digital. It's making them shift to an 80% digital model. And I think that, you know, as a publisher, it's very, very exciting from the standpoint of, you know, you are the gatekeeper to an audience. And, you know, a lot of times advertisers want an audience. They don't just want reach. And that's something you can offer.
Do you think that as the world kind of starts slowly, very slowly returning to normal, advertisers or brands will kind of switch back to doing a lot more traditional marketing? Or do you think a lot of it will stay in digital?
Let me ask you a question. Do you think that consumers, as things maybe, you know, like we're obviously not going to be in this pandemic the same way we are now over the next 3 or 4 years, things will get better. That is an encouraging note as well as it is a factual one, I think. Do you think that consumers will return to their regular retail behavior, or do you think that there's a permanent amount of shift towards digital online content, buying, selling, all that kind of stuff? Do you think that people will shift back to their normal behavior? Do you think people will adopt many of the behaviors they've adopted here during the pandemic?
I guess that depends on how long all this goes on, but I mean, yeah, definitely. I think there are some habits and behaviors that will stick with consumers, but that definitely also depends on, you know, the category of these products. Although I do love online shopping for clothes, there's not quite a replacement for going in and trying things on before purchasing them in the store. So yeah, I think it'll be interesting to kind of see how that plays out.
I mean, my bet, and I think most others in this space, and it's not like some kind of revelation, is that many of these behaviors are probably going to be here to stay. Some will start to like be short-lived. I don't think that Instacart is going to replace people going to the grocery store at large, but do I think that a huge portion of the population will continue to use Instacart that never used it before, or Uber or whoever, to like actually deliver, you know, goods that they used to always make trips to the store for? Absolutely, I do. And I think that because of that type of behavior alone, I think that this portion of digital is going to be here with us forever and probably continue to rise. And I think that it means that not only will more advertising budget get shifted to digital, it means that these digital advertising budgets will get grayer, meaning what is digital advertising and what is a marketing budget will get blurred in between that and sales and product strategies and things like that for a lot of these major brands. And I think you'll see partnership investments and things like that that you didn't see before, that you used to maybe see in traditional media, where, you know, like Nike is the sponsor of all the NFL uniforms, for example. You know, Nike could also be the sponsor of, you know, all Thrillist sports content. I don't even know if the Thrillist does sports content, but I do think that there's an opportunity for a lot of things like that.
Good news for publishers. The last topic I have is just a little update from Google. So publishers can now determine exactly how much traffic is generated from Google's news tab. So you'll have the ability to filter and analyze traffic coming from the news tab in search results. The Search Console performance report, in addition to showing the number of clicks received, also indicates impressions, average position, and click-through rates for any links seen in the news tab in Google Search. So, yep, just a little update that I think publishers, if you get traffic from the news tab, now you can kind of drill in and get some more data on that.
Yeah, I think that that's one of the few things Google has done recently with the SERP that I like, that I think is spurred from the pandemic. I think that there are some things that I think in SERPs that will maybe shift back to the way that they were maybe 6 months ago, eventually. But that's actually one that I'm hoping that they keep here to stay. There's a lot of weird things that I've noticed recently. Yesterday, I was looking on Google, and I found a video, and below the video, they actually gave me three clips within the video where I could click and it would take me to that portion of the video.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, wow, what a great way to make content a commodity.
Yeah.
And make it completely non-unique. So thanks, Google.
Thanks. Always, I guess, looking out for the users, but rarely for the, I don't know. I'll stop talking. I don't want to.
It's okay, Shelby. You can tell the people. I feel like the people hear what I think a lot, and I think they're ready to hear your opinion. I think the people want to know, what does Shelby really feel about antitrust?
Well, the people must continue to listen to this podcast to find out.
I love it. Born and bred a marketer.
And that's all I got for this week.
Same for me. And we'll catch you next time on another episode of The Publisher Lab.